So when that came into effect, the dairymen who had refused or had, you know, didn't pay attention to it, were in really bad shape because, like I said, it wasn't unusual for a dairy farmer to lose his whole herd to tuberculosis.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the state reimbursed them for about half the value of that animal through a fund that they had set up for that. But say an example where a man had spent years breeding that herd to top production, there's no way they could pay him what those animals were worth.
Mm-hmm.
And he, you know, a lot of guys went broke over that. So it had to be done because it would spread like wildfire. If your neighbor had it, you probably would have it. It could be carried by several different ways. They said the birds even would carry it in the feed particles from one herd to another.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that was true or not, but it was transmitted mostly by the bulls from one herd to another.
Mm-hmm.
Or by unclean. If a veterinary would come to your farm and not wash his boots and his hands and everything properly, go to another farm, he could transfer it to another farm.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that's pretty well gone. Although Mexico has, and some of the other countries still have tuberculosis, I think. And then, of course, another bad one was TB. It was nothing to get TB in your barn, and it would go through there in the wintertime when it was closed up tight. And you'd have a dozen cows that would be reactors for TB, and you had to sell those.
Mm-hmm.
Also, because that could affect the milk and or the meat. They just, you know, they had to go away with them. So that was another thing that changed a lot of the way they had done things, you know, was that they just had to lower the boom, you might say, and get rid of these diseases. And that's where they done it, by testing and then eradication, immunity systems,
yeah,
vaccinations. And they done it, and they've done a good job at it.
Yeah.
So today, when you drink milk, you don't have to worry about either one of those things being in there.
Mm-hmm. All right, now we'll get into the lifespan of the cow and how breeding them can get.
Okay, an average heifer comes in production when she's 30 months old, 2.5 years old. That's the ideal time for a heifer to have her first calf.
Mm-hmm. In other words,
9 months before that time, 280 days, she was bred and carried that calf during that time. She dropped her first calf at 30 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then if she's an average animal, she will have 5 or 6 more calves or cycles before she's worn out and ready for beef. Of course, we have dairy animals who have been producing for as high as, 12 or 14 years after they have been, you know, after the first calf.
Yeah.
But that's very unusual. So the average is, I think, 3 or 4. It's 5, or maybe 5 now, I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
In that area. 3, 4, 5. 5 just calvings, and they're pretty well, they start losing production, and it's not profitable to keep anymore. So she's sold off for beef.
Yeah.
You know, it's a salvage product, but she's still a good healthy animal, but she's not no longer suitable for milk production.
Uh-huh.
And so that's what you do. You cull them. When the production hits a certain level, they can, you know, they have their charts and graphs they go by. When she levels out and then starts down each lactation cycle, she goes lower. When she gets the well-managed dairy herd, this says, well, here's the cutoff period. Here's when she's got to go.
Mm-hmm.
And that probably will be in the 5th lactation.
Alright. And now we're going back to earlier. When you referred to the sale of milk and you said 100 weight, what's
for
that?
For 100 pounds of milk.
That's all right. Right.
For 100 pounds of milk. That's the way all milk is sold. Is 100 pounds. And then it's not only 100 weight, but there's the other compliance thing is what's the test of it? Standard milk is 3.5 butterfat. 3.5 is standard milk. That's what they pay when they quote the market price. That's for 100 weight of 3.5 milk. So you'll see milk is $12 a 100 weight. That means that milk is $12 a 100 weight for 3.5 milk butterfat.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're below that, they'll discount you a couple points, which reduces the price. And if you're over that, they'll pay you extra money for it. premium.
What kind of cows do you have? Because there's some produce more butter, fat than other ones.
That's right. Well, yeah, your Jerseys are a small animal, and they're a real pretty cow.
Mm-hmm.
But and they're noted for their high butter fat content. Jersey will produce about 5% of its total milk weight from the butter fat. And that's yellow, creamy-looking milk.
Mm-hmm.
But the market doesn't demand that anymore. So, and it hasn't for a long time. The market now demands more milk and more milk solids and less butter fat.
Yeah.
So the Jersey is not as popular as it used to be. Most popular dairy animal in the world is a Holstein.
Mm-hmm.
And they came from Holland, and the Dutch raised the Holsteins and got them to where they are today. And that's the kind we had, always Holsteins. We used to have a few mixed in for, we have a few Jerseys and a few Guernseys mixed in to get the butter fat content, but that probably was 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
We've had a Holstein ever since. And there's more than one reason for that. The production was higher on the Holstein, and then the salvage value. The calves were bigger. When the bull calves were born, they'd be larger, and you get more money out of those. And then when the mature dairy animal was sold for beef, she'd bring more money. So it was an economic thing, as well as just for the milk.
Yep. How did the milk industry, like money-wise, how did it keep you financially when 30, 40 years ago? Was it a good job back then, or?
Well, like I said in the early part of the interview, in the 30s, it was real depressed. There was hardly any market for milk because people didn't have the money to buy milk, and the government programs weren't in effect. There was no programs where they'd give poor people milk.
Mm-hmm.
And so they couldn't afford to raise it for a dollar or a hundredweight. That's what it was bringing.
Mm-hmm.
And but after they got the school lunch milk program, and they got the programs for the needy, giving milk and cheese to needy people, the things sort of stabilized.
Mm-hmm.
It's been that way ever since. Well, even though there is a surplus of times, it's been a more stable market. And, like I say, that's been done through several means. The government subsidizes the dairy farmers at times of when the production is low and they need milk, they'll raise the support price. In other words, they'll pay more for the product they buy. Like, the government is always buying powdered milk and cheese.
Mm-hmm.
And the price of milk goes real low, they'll step in and buy so many million pounds of product.
Uh-huh.
And that'll boost the market. But now, right now, the market's working all on its own now. There's no government in it because there's not enough product to go around.
Mm-hmm.
We heard on TV or months ago. So, and that's the way it would be best if it could be kept that way, but it probably won't last forever. But it's a supply and demand situation, is like anything else. You know, when it gets to be too much of it, then the price is depressed. I don't know if that answers your question or not.
Yeah. I think that pretty well covers everything.
Well, let's see him. But I think, you know, the whole picture of dairy now has went from a, like we talked about, the 1-2 cow early 20s dairy farm to in the 40s dozen cow dairy farm to the modern dairy farm probably will average in the neighborhood of 50 cows. And the reason for that was mostly the mechanization. You just can't afford to buy all the machinery you need to take care of a herd of 25 cows. You have to have closer to 100 to make it feasible. And that's what has forced the dairy farmers that are left in the business to do.
Yep.
And better or worse or indifferent, that's the way it's going to be because of the cost of the things that you buy.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else?
I don't think so.
And when you look at the whole dairy industry and think about what's happened on the farms, the whole industry, I guess, is growing in the same fashion. The early days, the cream man came twice a week and picked it up in cans, unrefrigerated cans. And then in the 40s, the milkman came and picked up cans of milk, whole milk, and that had been refrigerated or cooled. And now today you see the stainless steel tankers, the double bottom tankers going down the highway. That's the modern way that the milk industry is growing.
Uh-huh.
And that just about reflects what happened out in the farm too. It's all just a change of industry.
Yep.
And probably 80% of the milk today is bottled in plastic jugs.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where we're at. It's just a changing industry. That's all it's good.
Yeah.
And always will be. I think the future is going to be, the near future is going to be milk that's going to have a shelf life of 30 to 60 days.
Oh. How long is the shelf life right now?
I think 12, 14 days.
Uh-huh.
But this new pasteurization process, they call it high temperature sterilization. They free fall this milk. They put ultraviolet light, ultraviolet arc through there. And by the time it hits the bottom, it's sterile.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a high temperature. And then it's immediately cooled, and it's like, it'll keep in an open can, I think, for, I don't know, almost 50, 60 days. In an unsealed can.
Uh-huh.
So that, what that'll do, open up the milk market for the whole world. Now we can't ship whole milk overseas because it won't keep.
Uh-huh.
And the taste of evaporated milk is not that great.
Yeah.
People don't like that flavor. And powder milk, of course, has been with us a long time, but if they get this sterilization process perfected, there's millions of people in the world that would like milk.
Mm-hmm.
Can't get it now because we can't get it there.
I did it all myself. They can't see.
So that just holds a whole lot of promise for the future.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you have to survive in it.